member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 15th of September, Anno Domini 2012, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Linda Wildman, filling in for Dave Enright,
who is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest on his motorcycle, wind streaming through his hair, bugs in his teeth.
Just 9.1.
Yeah, no thanks.
His do-rag flying.
We're going to start with the news before we get to the phones, but you know you can always give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. In case you've been hiding underneath a rock somewhere on Mars.
And curiosity hasn't zapped you yet. It's got a freaking laser on its head.
The rest of you know that Apple's iPhone event is finally behind us. Excuse me, iPhone 5 event, I beg your pardon. And the company's next generation smartphone is probably less than a week away from becoming the fastest selling iPhone yet. Now that the new iPhone is official, the phone's key specs are confirmed. It will feature a 4-inch display, a new processor, a dual core, I believe, and a new design that is just 7.6 millimeters thick. Considering all the rumors, leaks, photos, and videos that led up to Wednesday's announcement, the iPhone 5 really wasn't much of a surprise at all. As is typical of Apple, however, the company did manage to pitch a few curveballs during its press conference. And here are all the biggest surprises. I'm not going to go through everything they talked about, just the things that were interesting to me. Because if you wanted to do the news, you could talk about the things interesting to you. A6 processor. We knew that Apple would be updating its iPhone chip since it needed G4 LTE support. The A6 is twice as fast as the iPhone 4S's chipset. And honestly, I think Apple really needed that, including twice the graphics performance, because my phone is way faster than my friend's iPhone.
Yeah. One of the things that's common for Apple is they don't really give any deep details. But people who took apart the A5X chip, it was dual core CPU and quad core GPU, and now the A6 is twice as fast on CPU and twice as fast on GPU. So we got to wait for the first ones to actually hit the market so people can tear them apart. And there's this company that X-rays inside chips to figure out what's in them.
Right.
So it's at least dual core quad core GPU, maybe even more than that now.
Right. And not just a bigger display, but an actual better display. One thing that's been wrong with the iPhone, I think, is it's beginning to look a little dull, thanks to all the AMOLED screens. You can admit that now since the new one is out, so it's okay to admit it, Steve. Apple finally stepped up its game. The new 4-inch display in the iPhone 5 is 44% better color saturation compared to the old Retina display. The Retina display had great resolution and really not good contrast The colors didn't pop. There's new noise cancellation technology with 3 microphones. 2 seem to work fine in the 4S, but apparently 3 isn't a crowd. Better battery life. Industry watchers and consumers alike were worried that the addition of the G4 LTE might hurt battery performance, but Apple says the new iPhone 5 battery will last even longer than the one used in the iPhone 4S, and they better hope it's true since you still can't remove it. Better camera. It still captures 8-megapixel images, but now takes better low-light photos and provides 40% faster photo capturing as well. Apple also said the camera can take still shots while recording HD video. It now includes a built-in panorama mode. And I really kind of liked the new iPod Touch. It's just 6.1 millimeters thick. And it includes the same 4-inch display as the iPhone 5. It supports Siri, comes in a variety of colors, and ships with a matching loop wristband. And we know how excited you all are about the wristband. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's new iPhone. And your choices are, OMG, I can't wait. I'll get one soon. Meh. Android forever, and where's my iPad mini? So far, we've got 36 votes, and meh, is ahead, followed by Android Forever, followed by OMG, I Can't Wait, followed by Where's My iPad Mini, and I'll Get One Soon has one vote. That's probably my friend Dan. And, of course, when you're done with that, you'll have more to say. I know you. So check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It'll take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
You're good. You're good, Linda. Where the question is, what do you think of Apple's new iPhone and iPods? And, of course, that's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. I have to admit, I watched some of the announcement, and I caught the part where whoever it was, I wasn't paying that much attention, asked Siri, who won the game last night, and it said the Packers beat somebody, whatever, whatever. And the entire audience weed themselves like an overbred Pomeranian. And I thought to myself, I've had that for what, 6 months, 8 months already on Google Now?
And a lot of the...
Thank God Apple finally invented it.
Well, a lot of the blogs have been saying that. There wasn't anything new compared to the rest of the industry, but this was brand new for Apple's phone,
right?
Because Apple only comes out with a new phone once a year. In fact, one of the opinions on the site was, well, that took us off the air.
I can't hear anybody now.
There we go.
Oh, thank you.
We're getting a weird echo in the headset, and Linda's trying to find what button it is.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
All right, so then we got nothing in the headphones.
Yeah, I'd rather have the button. I'd rather have the echo than the nothing. Thank you.
Yeah. One of the people on the opinions was saying that there's a new Android phone coming out every couple of months, adding new features. And yeah, a lot of the Android phones have had these features for quite a while, but it's the first time Apple's put them in their phone.
Yeah, but excuse me, there could have been an upgrade to Siri that gave people that. You didn't have to wait for a new phone. There's nothing really new in this phone except the AMOLED display and a faster processor. The reality is that had there been an upgrade to the software, most of the stuff that came with this, iPhone users would have had already.
Right. And the new Siri thing is in the iOS upgrade, not as actually part of the phone. So the 4S and the 4 and the iPads, and now the iPod Touch for the first time, fifth generation, is going to get Siri now too. So that is part of the OS. They could have rolled that out sooner.
They could have just rolled that out. They didn't need a new phone for that. And people are saying they're a little disappointed in the phone. I mean, again, Apple's problem is they spend 9 months hyping the new phone that's coming out. And when it comes out, A, we've already heard all about it. Yep. And B, there's nothing revolutionary.
And a lot of the complaints are, like your poll, what didn't get announced.
We
didn't get the new iMacs. We didn't get the new iPad Mini.
Right.
Although the new iPod Nano looks like an iPad Mini, but it isn't an iOS device. It's just music and movie player.
Right.
But so maybe that's where the rumors were starting of an iPad Mini, because it's the form factor and looks like a small iPad, but
right.
It isn't. Yeah, and a lot of people have commented on that. Since Steve Jobs died, the rumors have gotten more accurate and more frequent, so when Apple actually does make an announcement, everybody knew it already.
Yeah.
And that's very frustrating for the pundits who are trying to generate page views. So all of the articles now are, you know, what the iPhone isn't, you know, what didn't work, you know, what we didn't get. It's frustrating. One of the things they did do to make the screen better is they figured out a way to put the digitizer in the screen. So in the previous iPhones and some of the other phones, there were three layers. You had the LCD panel, the digitizer, and then the glass that protected it all. And so that cut down on the quality of the colors. It added to the reflectivity, and it added to the thickness. So now they've got the digitizer in the glass, and so that cut out one of the layers to make it thinner, cuts out a lot of the reflections, and really adds to that color gamut. So as an iPhone screen, it's way better than previous iPhones, and catching up to where some of the other Android screens have already been.
You Apple people need to get over your thin...
Blank, my Apple fanboy says. If you search for that...
You guys have an obsession with
thin. And actually, yeah, they
I prefer a phone with a little heft. so that I know I'm carrying it. I worry less about dropping it. Look, I get it. You're into Paris Hilton. I'm into Christina Hendricks. I get that. But the reality is I don't. These super thin, easy-to-drop phones.
Yeah, the phone isn't 5.6 millimeters thick. It's 5.6 millimeters thin.
Right. Right. I get that. I do. All right. We should probably go to the phones. Our first, our first caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's your question?
Yes, I have a Kodak camera, and my pictures are on the Easy Share site. If I load the camera pictures to the computer, how do they get on Shutterfly? They're still going to Easy Share.
The one of the issues is that since Kodak is cutting down, I don't think my mic is working.
Yeah, I don't think his mic is up either.
My volume is way down.
Friend of the show, Chris Reich, says it's not.
There we go. Now I can hear me, and I'm getting volume levels. Yeah. Since Kodak is shutting down its sales of digital cameras, they're still going to support the cameras they've already sold for a while, but they're shutting down sales of the cameras. They shut down the EasyShare website, and they're shifting everybody over to Shutterfly. Theoretically, what will happen is all the photos that you have on the EasyShare gallery will automatically go over to your Shutterfly account. When you log in to Shutterfly.
Yeah, I saw that on the gallery, but the EasyShare site...
EasyShare software itself is still working. Working, and...
That's where my pictures go from the camera to there. I called Shutterfly, and they said you can't load them to Shutterfly. You have to move them by a folder.
That sounds about right.
Oh,
unless...
Okay, so in other words, that EasyShare site's going to be there forever with those pictures?
No, the Kodak gallery is already gone. It closed on July 2nd.
I'm not talking about the gallery. I'm talking about where the pictures are loaded from the camera.
If Kodak is smart.
The EasyShare software on your computer.
Stays.
Yeah, the EasyShare site is already gone.
Yeah, the gallery.
Yes, they should update their EasyShare software to change where it gets uploaded to, and I haven't seen that happen yet.
I asked Shutterfly, and they said you have to do it by folders.
Okay, but what Kodak should be doing now, since the Kodak EasyShare software, the site is already gone.
No, the gallery site is gone. The EasyShare.
That's what I meant. The gallery site is gone.
Yeah, so I know that. But that's
now,
where you order pictures or whatever.
If
but
you take
loading
picture,
from the camera, they go to the EasyShare software.
Yes, and then do they show up automatically? They used to show up automatically in gallery, right?
No, you have to move them over.
Oh, well, then you're going to have to do the same thing to Shutterfly.
Yeah, but, okay, you can't just upload them from there. You have to do them by folder, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, you upload them by folder exactly the way you did from the EasyShare software.
Yeah, okay. They just had a button that you clicked. That's okay.
Okay.
So it's the same button on Shutterfly.
Internet Explorer, and I get Chrome. How does that work? Do you get an icon on the desktop?
Yes, when you go to install it, you have multiple choices. One is to put an icon in the desktop. It certainly will appear in your start menu.
And then when I open up, when I start, you could either choose Explorer or Chrome, right?
Well, what will happen is when you start either one, it will say whichever one is not currently your default.
Yep.
It'll say, oh, I'm not the default. Do you want to make me the default? And you pick yes or no.
Can you leave your default and switch back and forth?
Sure. You just have to answer the question. You have to click the button that says don't ask me anymore.
And then, like, if I'm on Chrome, everything that I did on Explorer, you're doing on Chrome, correct?
You can do all the same things. And when you install Chrome, one of the things that we'll ask you is, do you want me to move over all your bookmarks from Internet Explorer? And you say yes.
Yeah.
Now they're synced. The problem is, from now on, anything you save on one will not be available to the other.
Oh, okay. You just do the move once.
Right. You do the move once, and then you use that new browser exclusively.
Unless you're... Yeah, but you could if you choose either one, and you'd be capable of working equally.
You can work in either one, but anything you save in one does not appear in the other.
Unless you open the other one up and click it on there.
Yes, obviously,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks,
bye-bye.
James.
And I've posted a link on our link list from Shutterfly on how to upload your pictures to Shutterfly.
Yeah, there's a whole... series of things that I think Kodak needs to get their handle around more faster than they are right now. And one of them is, I know a lot of people are having these same sorts of questions,
yeah,
and they should update the software.
Yeah, they should update EasyShare so it points to the Shutterfly website instead of the EasyShare website that's gone.
Right, and they should do some sort of magic auto-upload thing.
They did do that. Everything that was on your EasyShare website is automatically...
No, I mean when you take a picture and save it in EasyShare,
right,
it should go up. Like when I take pictures on my Android phone, they automatically go up to Picasa, or actually Google Plus now. So everything is it's all about Google Plus. And so they're in a folder, and when I go to Google Plus, I can now say I want to share these, I want to share all of them, I want to share these ones I've selected, I want to delete these, whatever I want to do. And then I have them available, I can share them, I can send people the link. But the rest of it is automatic. So if I take a picture of you right now, in a minute or so, less than that because I have 4G, but not in the studio, it'll be up on the site and I can go share it immediately or whatever I want to do.
And if Google ever shuts that down, then you've got to change your software to upload somewhere else.
Then the hope is they would change the software to upload it to somewhere else. And, of course, Google also has data liberation.
Yep.
The DLF, the Data Liberation Front, which is part of Google Plus. You can go and download everything you've ever uploaded, all of your posts, all of your pictures, all of your everything, music, everything. You can download it all to your own machine. So that's kind of nice. Should we take a break? Okay, whenever you're ready.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Wildman, filling in for that guy.
Yeah, that guy, Dave Enright.
Dave Enright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are back. And our next caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. How are things in PA?
Oh, things are pretty good, but pretty bad with my computer right now.
Uh-oh, what happened?
I got hit with some kind of bug. I run ESET NOD 32. And it's always up to date, and apparently it didn't work this time. I was searching the web. Suddenly, the screen went blank. Then it went to full screen as if I had hit the F11 key with a message that says, "Your computer has been locked. This operating system is locked due to a violation of federal laws of the United States." And it tells me I was looking at child pornography and terrorist messages were sent. And to unlock this computer, I have to pay a $200 fine within 72 hours or get arrested.
Yeah, we're calling that hostageware that scares people into thinking that they've done something and to pay money. It's interesting. I've never known the police to warn you that they're going to come and arrest you.
Exactly. So what I did was I rebooted. And it boots up normally, even the system tray icons come up and the clock and everything with all the icons. Then all the icons disappear and the screen comes back. So I said, okay, I'll boot up in safe mode. So I booted up in safe mode, and it works fine when I boot up in safe mode. So in safe mode, I try to run a scan using NOD 32, and it didn't work very well. It scanned for about a minute or two and then stopped and left a blinking cursor on the bottom of the screen and didn't do anything else. So then I scanned in safe mode again with malware bytes. Didn't find anything, and that's where I am right now. So but where do I go from here?
You go with your computer to a reputable dealer, and they will take the hard drive out of your machine, put it into another machine as the second drive, and clean it off. The problem is you have a rootkit.
Oh, okay.
And the rootkit has clearly taken over your machine, and a rootkit runs at boot. It is the first thing that runs, and so you cannot clean it out from inside itself because it will stop any attempt to clean it. You have to take it out, make it a second drive, not boot from it, and then a clean machine can remove that problem because it's never been activated and therefore is not protecting itself. Now, certainly you can do that yourself if you have the expertise or the knowledge, but honestly, bring it to a reputable dealer, let them do it. You don't want to fool around with the possibility of doing something wrong and infecting your other machine or whatever. So my suggestion is take it to a reputable dealer. Now, it might be time to look at another antivirus program, Avast, AVG, whatever. But the reality is that, you know, it's always a leapfrog. It's a quick game of leapfrog, and they leaped ahead this time.
And it likely wasn't anything you did specifically. You probably just you happened to go to a website that was infected itself, usually through an ad, and that got into your computer just by going to that legitimate website. There have been a lot of problems with big websites. Facebook gets hits all the time. A malicious ad gets posted into the Facebook network, and then you go to Facebook, and your computer gets infected by it.
Okay, one more question.
Mm-hmm.
This computer has been gathering so much junk on it that one of these days I was about to reinstall the operating system anyway. In other words, wipe the hard drive completely. I do have the original disks that came with the machine. If I were to do that, would that solve the problem?
Maybe.
Depends on how cheap.
Sorry, but the reality is maybe.
If you remove the partition table, and you especially if you do it on another computer, because a lot of times the rootkits are resident in RAM, so even after you erase the hard drive, it's still in RAM and loads itself back onto the hard drive.
Right. What they often do is create a hidden partition, and put themselves in that. So it may well be that you repartition, you reformat everything else, but not that hidden partition. That's why you should bring it to somebody and get them to clean the machine first. Then you can wipe out the partition table and do everything without worrying about the fact that it's already loaded itself into RAM and is just waiting to get back in your machine.
Or throw that hard drive away and buy a new one.
Right, or just replace it with another hard drive.
Now, as I understand it, when you power down the machine, RAM is volatile memory. Therefore, the RAM is wiped whenever you power down the machine.
Right.
So are you saying when I bring the machine back up again, this will come back in RAM?
Well, if you boot the machine with your Windows disk, right, and you boot from the CD, not from the hard drive.
From a cold, full power off.
Cold, right. Full power off, wait 10 minutes for the RAM to discharge, blah, 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 blah. Then no, but that does not mean that there isn't a hidden partition on the drive where that virus is just waiting.
I see.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can certainly do it that way, and maybe you will win. I can't promise you will or won't.
Okay. Well, that's the next thing I'm going to try, and if that doesn't work, then like you said, I'll have to take it somewhere.
Yep.
Hey, thanks a lot for the advice.
Sure.
Yep.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, usually people don't want to wipe the machine because they've got stuff that isn't backed up, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
So that's not usually my first choice for them.
Yep. We had a couple of customers this week get caught by the random phone scam. Somebody calls them, and so you pick up your phone, and it says, "Hi, we're from Microsoft. Your computer's infected, and we want to help you clean it up. It's only going to cost X dollars." Usually they start out by saying, "Let us check for free. Let us check your computer, and it'll be free." And then once they get in, then they start telling you it's going to cost money. And so the one customer got really scared about that, and so he hung up the phone. And then he Googled Microsoft virus cleaning or something like that and called a random phone number he found on the internet who said, "Yeah, hi, we're Microsoft support. You have a virus on your machine." And talked him through installing a remote access program to take over his computer. And so he thought he was calling Microsoft,
right?
When it was just someone that offers Microsoft service. And so I look through the history and see he called this one company. And so I Google that company name. Almost every hit is, "Is this a scam? Or they charge me a ton of money? Or, you know, they're not who they say they are."
Yeah.
And the odd thing was he was on a Macintosh.
Yeah, right. Folks, trust me, Microsoft does not call you to tell you you have a virus. They simply do not.
In fact, nobody will legitimately call you to tell you have a virus.
Right. All right, our next caller, Charles from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Charles. What's your question?
Yes, hi. You were talking a while back about Google as an internet service provider.
Yes.
And yeah, and I was just wondering if you could expand upon that a little bit, the advantages and the costs, and how realistically possible it might be that they could do that here locally, and I'll take your answer off the phone. Thanks for your time.
Sure. Okay. Right now, Google is building fiber in Kansas City, both on the Kansas side and the Missouri side. They've got, I believe, a full 90% of all the neighborhoods signed up. So they will be putting fiber into those people's houses. They are obviously never going to cap you because they want you to use the internet as much as possible.
Yep.
They are charging for 1 gigabit symmetrical. That is to say, you get 1 gigabit download and 1 gigabit upload. They're charging $70 a month and giving you a terabyte of storage on Google Drive.
And that 1 gigabit is 1,000 megabit.
So it's
compared to the 10 megabit you typically get with regular.
So it's 100 times faster than almost anybody else. Now, if you want to pay $120 a month, you also get Google TV, which is a bunch of channels, and you can look at it at google.com/fiber. The other cool thing is that, and in both cases, they waive the $300 construction fee. However, if you want, you can get internet free for a year. You only get, I think it's 350 megabits.
Five.
Oh, it's 500 megabits?
Yeah.
Or
no, five megabits.
5 megabits. Right, 5 megabits. But you do pay the $300 construction fee. Or you can pay them $25 a month for a year, and that covers it. It is a reality. Nobody, they're not done yet, so we don't know. Now, as to the reality of bringing them here, we have miles and miles of dark fiber in Rochester. So if we were to offer that to Google, it would give them a leg up, a head start. And it's actually not just Rochester. It's all Monroe County. Lots of fiber. I forget how many miles of it, but it's a lot. And that's great. I have a friend who is in the – who is, I suppose I should say, related, has a tangential job to the county legislature. I'm trying to make this as generic as I possibly can, who says that the people who are not of his party – and you may take all of this with a grain of salt, would block anything like that. And I don't know that. I don't know any of the people in the state legislature. I don't know any of the people in the county legislature. I don't know anybody anywhere. So I don't know that any of that is true. But he says that the chances are slim to none that it would happen under the current administration. I don't know. I cannot imagine that they would in any way, shape, or form ever consider that a bad thing, to suddenly give your constituents the ability to do a gigabit of Ethernet in a town that is this technically savvy, that has this many. We have more patents per capita than anywhere else in the world. We have more patents to people who have lived here than almost anywhere else in the world. We are a smart, savvy, scientifically high town, and those people traditionally love the internet. Why would any politician slit his or her own throat by saying, oh no, we don't want to bring the internet here?
We have seen
that kind of speed. That's just stupid.
We have seen in other communities when the local town municipality government tries to put in internet that the local internet providers sue them for restraint of trade.
Yeah, I'm a little confused as to how bringing more trade in restrains trade, but okay,
yeah,
whatever.
Well,
I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, if the city gives you free internet, you're not going to buy internet from somebody else. So I could see how political lobbying could want to prevent Google from coming in, because if Google's going to give you free internet, then you're not going to buy internet from somebody else.
Right.
So it's like they're undercutting the competition and preventing the other companies from trying to sell their products.
Nothing prevents them from selling it, except that this is a better product. All they have to do is raise their speed.
Raise their speed, lower their price, and that's not what they've done. And we've seen that over the years with Verizon Fios has not come to Rochester because of the local internet providers here in Rochester have
Well, I don't know that personally.
But well, yeah, it's not obviously plain, but...
I don't know that personally.
Yeah.
Anyway, the reality is, Charles, that we don't know how Google is as an ISP because they haven't finished with Kansas City yet. On the other hand, I can't imagine they're anything but really, really cool. And it would be ludicrous speed on the internet. I would kill in public to get them here. It would be great. All right. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys. I have an iMac, and every time I put my password in to use the PC, almost every time, I'll say if I do it 10 times, 8 out of 10 times, the first time around, the screen gives you that little jiggle, you know, to let you know that you didn't put the password in correct. And I'd like to know what's going on because I'm clearly putting it in correct. So I've actually gotten in the habit now of, you know, when I touch the keyboard and the screen comes back up, I hit the delete key or something like that to, I don't know, clear it, I guess, before I actually start putting in the type word because there's an 80% probability that, you know, if I put the password in correctly, it's going to say it's not in correctly. And, you know, you'll just get that little screen if you're familiar with the Mac, the way it just kind of bobbles back and forth, and you got to do it again.
It shakes its head at you that you typed it wrong.
Yeah, right.
I see that all the time on all sorts of different passwords. We just ran into it yesterday at the office trying to log into our Google Calendar. It comes back and says, no, that password is wrong. And we yell at the computer and say, yes, it is right. And you type it again, and it says wrong. And then, yes, that's right. And then you type it one letter at a time with one finger, and it works.
Right, yes.
Usually what we think is happening is that you're typing just a hair too fast, and you mistype a character. So, you know, you're trying to hit an A, and you accidentally nick the S right next to it. And because you're typing so fast, it thinks it was wrong. But we haven't found any other specific reason for that other than, yeah, you are typing it wrong. And because it obscures the key characters you're typing, you never see what you're typing wrong. So our general suggestion to everyone is just slow down a hair, because that's usually what makes it work. You type it wrong two or three times, and then you get mad, and you type it really, really slow, and it works.
So, Larry, I'd like you to perform some experiments and report back next week.
Okay.
I'm not kidding here. I'd like you to try, when you bring it out of sleep, wait for a few seconds.
That's another good
point. Before you type your password.
Because maybe it missed the first character or two you typed.
It could have missed the first character or two. So wait a second or two before you type anything. Then, whether or not that works, for a few times when you bring it out of sleep or whatever, type your password really slowly the first time. Go in right at this time you normally do. You know, usually you hit the space bar and then start typing.
Mm-hmm.
Do it that way, but slow, and report back to us as to what works and doesn't.
And that's also something I've noticed. When you're waking your computer from sleep, if you hit the space bar, it may be feeding that space key you just typed into that password field that's open.
Okay, right. I did figure that out.
So I always
never
use
touch the space key now because I know for certain it's feeding the space.
Yeah, I always use the shift key because it doesn't do anything except tell the computer you hit a key. But it doesn't actually type in anywhere that might be open for typing.
Okay.
I've seen people click the mouse, which that click could get passed through, and you could end up clicking whatever your cursor happened to be on.
Uh-huh.
Just moving the mouse should be enough without actually clicking the button. But I like using the shift key because it's one of the physically larger keys,
uh-huh.
Usually not quite as big as the space bar, but usually okay. Larger to make it easier to hit.
I will try that.
All right.
And I do have one other question.
Sure.
This mouse drives me insane when I use Excel. I'm using the magic mouse, I think.
Yeah.
I guess you call it. And from time to time, it'll move the spreadsheet completely to the end if I'm not very careful holding it. Or if I go to the web, it will expand the page. And I wind up, you know, doing the quick double click.
Yep.
Is there something that I can go into preferences or something and change maybe the sensitivity of the mouse?
Yeah, the Magic Mouse has scrolling features in it, so it will, you can do scroll up, down, left, and right. I'm using one now.
Right.
And there is a tracking speed and a scrolling speed preference in system preferences for the mouse.
Oh, okay.
But what we've seen is that Excel ignores that. So you can have your scrolling speed set to as slow as possible in the system preferences.
Right.
And when you go into Excel, if you just happen to scroll just a tiny bit, it just zooms right to the end of the spreadsheet. I've been looking for some other sensitivity setting inside of Excel to see if you can do that, but I haven't found it myself yet.
Okay, so it's not just me.
Right.
No, it isn't. And I'm sorry, Larry, we got to take a break.
Okay, well, thank you for your help.
Yep, thanks.
And
thanks
for my assignment.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes, with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 42 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Where Sound Bites, right here on the truly great, member-supported, let me repeat that, member-supported, Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, I have an interesting news story. Thank you very much. I actually was an English major for part of my life. In the good old days of spy versus spy, the honeypot was a tried and true espionage technique laced with danger, intrigue, and sex. These days, as Australian soldiers have found out the hard way, all it takes to seduce your way to state secrets is a Facebook friend request and a Google image search for hot chicks. As Australian news site news.com.au reports, a recent Aussie government look at the unhealthy intermingling of social media in the military, several of its soldiers have fallen victim to the oldest trick in the Facebook, someone pretending to be an attractive, flirtatious girl when in reality they're not, except instead of spammers, they get enemies of the state. The report warns troops to beware of fake profiles. Media personnel and enemies create fake profiles to gather information. For example, the Taliban have used pictures of attractive women as the front for their Facebook profiles and have befriended soldiers. Why is that
Isn't that a violation of the Quran? To show a woman without... to show a woman's face?
No idea. I don't know. I have read the Quran. I just don't remember that being a stricture. Why is that a problem other than terrorists have access to your karaoke pics? Karaoke, sorry. Because soldiers' status updates can often include the kind of seemingly innocuous information that ends up giving away location, statuses, and other sensitive details that could get people killed. The report goes on to say that soldiers have been too trusting of Facebook's default privacy settings, something which we've all fallen victim to at one time or another. It's just that the stakes for us normals aren't anywhere near as high. But what's the solution? Either to ban social media for troops altogether, as some have argued in favor of, or to insist on stricter guidelines and especially enforcement. Let's hope the latter proves effective. It's hard enough serving your country in a far-flung land without feeling even more cut off from the world than geography dictates. So, do you think about who you're friending on Facebook? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I'll tell you what, all too often on Facebook I get these completely random, unknown, I don't even know who they are, people. What are you doing? Living my life. You should go do the same. What? Okay, whatever.
Well, their life is trying to steal your information.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And invariably, each one of them is a knockout gorgeous woman. Now, I understand how sexually attractive I am. I get that. But it can't be that every woman on Facebook sees that. Even I don't think every single one of them sees it. I know sex sells, but it doesn't sell that well. So, yeah, it's just, it gets ridiculous. You know, at what point do you stop and think to yourself, this probably isn't real? Here we go. And the guy's in the IRC chat. Chris Reich says, Nick, what are you wearing? I'm wearing my Tick t-shirt and a pair of black jeans. And Just any similar problems on Google Plus? No, I haven't had those problems on Google Plus. I have not. Every conversation I've ever had on Google Plus was pleasant and interesting and introspective. And I've had those on Facebook too, but I haven't had the what are you doing?
There's too many normals are on Facebook.
Too many normal people on Facebook. How can it ever be successful without some of the whack jobs? It's a problem, and it's a true of any social medium. You know, I get people write to me all the time on Twitter, and if you use any one of the hundreds of tools that are available to unravel the short codes, you know, they send like bit.ly, http://bit.ly/something. That's a URL shortener. So you take a real URL, send it through bit.ly, and it gives you a tiny short one. Well, what that does is obfuscates the actual address. So they could be sending me anywhere in the world. Luckily, there are sites you can go to that unobfuscate those things. And there's even a plugin for Chrome called Untiny. So you can see where they're sending you before you go there. And I just don't respond to those very well, I'm afraid. Get angry. Although I've recently begun unfriending people on Facebook who are unrelenting in their political ads.
I've been getting sports ones, too. I don't follow that team. I don't care that you do either.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it hasn't been just one political party or the other. If I look back and see that the last 15 things you posted are all political, I'm done with you. I'm done with you. I'm not there for politics. And you know what? I don't know that there's a single human being ever whose political opinion was swayed because of a cute picture on Facebook. Or a not even cute, or whatever picture on Facebook. So I'm not impressed by that stuff. And I just stop. I'm done with that.
I think part of it is that a lot of the political analysts said at the last election that Obama won because he really captured social media.
Mm-hmm.
So now all the other candidates are trying to capture social media and doing it really badly.
Well, it's not the candidates, because I'm not following any of the candidates.
Right, yeah,
it's any of them.
It's the candidates who are generating the grassroots support from their constituents.
Right.
And, yeah, so post on Facebook every time, you know, we want you to say something.
Right. And half the stuff, it's not that I don't follow politics. I do. And so half the stuff I read, I know, is bogus. That it's either an outrageous lie somebody's put out or a piece of misinformation, which is pretty much the same thing, or it's just downright wrong. And I can't do it anymore. I just can't. You know what? I have never suffered fools gladly, and now that I'm old, I don't have to suffer them at all. So they're just gone. I'm done. I don't care anymore. Life is way too short. They have to scroll past 50 or 60 political polemics before I get to an actual post that could possibly be interesting.
I go to specific blogs when I want to read stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. And I have an answer for Ken earlier with the scrolling Excel problem.
That would have been Larry.
Larry?
Yeah.
Sorry. It sounded like Ken.
We haven't had a Ken.
In the Mac, under Universal, so the problem was Excel scrolling too fast. So if you go to your System Preferences, under Universal Access, under Mouse and Trackpad, you have mouse options and trackpad options, and one of those options is your scrolling speed. So you can slow down your overall system scrolling speed so that Excel doesn't scroll so fast, but then the rest of the system scrolling slows down a little bit too. So it's sort of a trade-off between the two. So I did notice that when I had it set to fast, I flick my mouse and I'm now at cell XU, which how many –
That's awful far away.
Way far down. If I set it really slow, Excel barely scrolls at all, but then the whole rest of the system barely scrolls. So you can play with that scrolling speed. There's about 10 options between fast and slow.
You can use a different mouse.
Use a different mouse, yeah.
You know, the problem is it's the Magic Mouse because it's essentially a trackpad in a mouse shape. So you go sideways and up and down and everything else. So
simultaneously, yeah.
Right. So if you just used a regular mouse, you would not have that problem. So.
Yep. And you can also turn off inertia. that's one of the features where if you flick your finger a little bit, it keeps going.
Yep.
Like it would in the real world.
Yep. Yep.
If you turn off inertia, then it doesn't go as fast either. But yeah, so you can do that if you want to continue using your Magic Mouse. You can slow down the scrolling speed so it's tolerable in Excel, but not too slow for everything else.
Right.
I've got a HP mouse. I forget a generic Windows USB mouse on my computer at home, and the ball, a wheel. The Apples have the balls. Apples have balls. Microsoft have wheels. The wheel. Yours does the same thing. It clicks between each scrolling position.
Yep.
So you can really feel how far you're scrolling.
Yep.
With the Apple scrolling features, it's always been you keep moving your mouse or you keep moving your finger and it keeps moving very, very smoothly, and for some people too smoothly.
Well, and that's an interesting question in terms of ergonomics and usability.
Yeah.
You know, having the stops gives you a haptic feedback.
Yep.
That I think is useful. You don't have to pay as much attention to it once you learn it.
Yeah.
But with that, just the slightest wrong move and you're off in the ether somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that that's a better thing ergonomically. That's just me, but that's how I feel.
And there's enough mice that you have a choice about which one you want to use.
That's exactly right. And that's what makes the world go round, is choice. It's been an interesting couple of days listening to people talk about the new Apple announcements and what did and didn't and was and wasn't, and they sold out the first batch in an hour.
Yeah, last year it took 22 hours to sell out.
But that doesn't tell me anything. It doesn't tell me how many they made.
Yeah.
You know, okay, they sold them all out in an hour. What if they only made four?
Yep.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they didn't, but I mean, that, you see my point?
That will probably come up.
That's not a statistic. That's just that's a talking point.
The actual numbers will probably come out next weekend when they actually start selling.
Right. If they sold 100,000 in 22 hours and then sold 100,000 an hour, that tells me something.
Yeah.
But just we sold them out in an hour, in fact, tells me absolutely nothing.
One of the things that was a little annoying, too, is they said that you were going to be able to start pre-orders at midnight on Friday as date was.
Yeah.
And I mistakenly assumed it was midnight local time.
Ah.
It was midnight Pacific time. So 3 a.m. Eastern time.
Right.
And so people were staying up all night or getting up early so they could click that buy button.
And that's actually Friday morning.
Yeah. But you have to tell people Thursday night at midnight, because if you say Friday at midnight, they'll go on Saturday.
Right, right. Or 12:01 Friday morning.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, when they physically go on sale in the stores next Friday, the 21st, it's local time the store opens.
Right.
So what we've seen in the past, in fact, when the iPad 3 came out last spring, the iFixit guys who tear things apart and look on the inside flew to Australia. So they could buy theirs first and have it torn apart before the U.S. woke up in the morning, so for their 9 a.m. store openings.
Right. I had a friend who actually drove across the time zone from wherever she lived to whatever the next state was that was an hour earlier, so she could get her iPad an hour earlier. But I'm telling you, Apple, I think I've said this before on this show, Apple is leaving a lot of money on the table. Apple fanatics will be lined up for hours in front of stores.
They probably already have started.
Waiting to get their stuff. Every single one of them should be sitting in a chair with an Apple logo on it, sleeping in a tent with an Apple logo on it, sleeping in a sleeping bag with an Apple logo on it, wearing clothes with Apple. Do you tell me the truth. If you were sitting in that line and you were one of those Apple fanboys and somebody came in with that tent or sleeping bag or chair, the next time you would have one, you absolutely would have one.
Yep. Apple kind of goes the opposite way of that. Getting Apple T-shirts is an exclusive thing, and not everyone can have one. So the select few that get them, they give them away at a new store opening.
Right.
And if you go to the Cupertino Apple headquarters, they have a merchandise store there. But the average person can't get Apple logoed merchandise.
Right.
So it's exclusive. It's high end. It all goes back to the presumption that Apple is the high end, Mercedes and Lexus, and not the low end Chevy and Ford.
Right.
Ferrari has a lot of merchandise they sell with the Ferrari logo on it, because none of us can afford Ferraris.
So why buy the logo, I suppose? Yeah. All right, that's it. We're done for this hour. But I'm sorry, we are coming back for another hour with Linda Wildman, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer Show, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York, on the line. Welcome, Mark. What's your question? Sorry.
With Avast, I was wondering what your opinion was of how effective the boot time scan is in that program.
Well, how do you mean effective?
Well... I ran it. I run Avast on my laptop, and I did a boot time scan, and it found a lot of things it didn't find in a regular scan, because I did a regular scan in safe mode,
right?
And it came up with nothing,
right?
And then I said, I saw the boot time scan feature in there, so I said, let me do a boot time scan. I scheduled it and wanted to restart the computer. And it did a boot time scan, and it found a bunch of things it didn't find, in a regular scan.
Did it look like an old DOS text screen?
Yes.
Yeah. It's before Windows loads.
Right. Okay. And so it's finding some of the things that often load at boot time, which might be rootkits, but are just might be loading early. And that's a good thing. I don't know that it would save you from some of the more aggressive rootkits like Carl had earlier, but I don't know that it would.
It's not quite as good as booting a completely different disk,
right?
But it's better than running it from inside of Windows.
Right.
Okay, so that should be something I should periodically do, just to, if I'm not having any kind of problems, just to make sure I got those little dark things.
It can never hurt. I personally would do it whenever I felt my machine was not right.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell when you've used the machine long enough and suddenly it changes.
Right.
That's the time I might do something along that line. But whatever, it certainly is. It's not going to hurt the machine. I mean, I wouldn't do it every day.
Right.
But it certainly isn't hurting the machine, and finding stuff like that is not a bad idea at all.
Yeah, I noticed when I did that scan, you really got to sit on top of the computer, or at least check it every once in a while, because it will not do anything until you tell it what to do. Obviously,
that's right.
In a boot time scan, because it wants to know to quarantine it, delete it, you know. So that's the only one disadvantage, but I guess it's a small price to pay.
There's no yes to all.
To keep these things out of there. Second question, if you have a moment.
Sure.
Are there any other alternatives as to free firewalls other than which one am I using?
Zone Alarm is the big one.
Yeah, that is the one I'm using. Is there any other alternatives that are any good, or you think that's pretty much the best one?
Do you have a router in your system?
I do not.
Okay, then you do need a free firewall. What operating system are you running?
That one is XP, the laptop. I plug that into the modem when I need it and use it that way.
Yeah, there's one called Komodo, C-O-M-O-D-O. It is not spelled like the dragon.
Right.
And that one's pretty good as well.
Okay.
Are you having problems with Zone Alarm?
I think it slows the system down a little bit.
Well, they all will a little bit, and it depends on how fast your machine is to begin with.
Yeah,
you know, the newer machines don't notice
the
laptop's
they're in there. That's not the fastest computer in the house. Any means. But, you know, it seems to be the last thing to load and the longest thing to load on the whole thing. And, you know, I don't have much running, you know, as far as booting up with the system. I try to keep it to a minimum.
So you have a bunch of different machines in your house, but you don't have a router?
Yeah, because the only thing I really have is my main computer that I use, and sometimes I use the laptop as an alternative, and I just plug that into the modem, and I disconnect the...
All right, okay, yeah. All right, good.
Getting an inexpensive...
I am going to do a router eventually.
Well, doing it sooner is probably better, since, after all, once you have a router, almost every one of them comes with a firewall.
Right. And that obviously is incoming only, correct?
Well, mostly yes. Yes, but if you're blocking incoming, yes, it is really designed for incoming only, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, very good. I appreciate the information.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is good to have a firewall, always good to have a firewall. I agree that it's better to have a firewall that does both incoming and outgoing. Zone Alarm does that. If you get, for example, some sort of a problem machine, a problem virus, and it tries to send something out, Zone Alarm will indicate that to you. It will notify you and say, there's a new program that I don't know about trying to access the internet, and here's the name I have, which is not always...
Yeah, that's the big danger of the firewalls. It gives you the process name, which may not be the same as the program name.
Right, which is all it can give you.
Remember, we had a lot of people get messed up with imn.exe?
Right.
Internet Mail and News, which is Microsoft Outlook Express.
Right.
And suddenly they can't get their mail anymore.
Right, and that's a real problem. One of the big problems when you're running something like Zone Alarm is you have to know enough. You know, if you don't know enough to deal with it effectively... it can be more dangerous than not having it at all, because you'll suddenly start blocking things you need. Luckily, of course, you can always unblock them. So if you block something, write down that you did it. Because if you're anything like me, you do it and then you forget about it. And then 2 hours later, you go to check your mail and your mail doesn't work. And you start thinking there's something wrong with the mail. But if you write down, I blocked IMN, and that's just before this problem started, then you go back and try unblocking IMN and getting your mail, and your mail comes through, now you know that IMN is mail. You know, so it's important, I think, whenever you're doing anything to your computer, to not remember it, to write it down. Because we all say, oh, I'll remember that. It was a huge deal. And it's a huge deal right now, but tomorrow morning it isn't. Half an hour from now it isn't. An hour from now, you've gone and made a cup of coffee, you've played with the dog, you've answered the mail, you've answered the call of nature, you come back, and you've completely forgotten you did something. And now you try something else. I had that problem, actually, with Google Chrome. I loaded an extension. And about a day later, suddenly something else didn't work. And I thought, what the? And I thought back, and I said, you know what? Let me undo this extension and just see what happens. So I removed the extension. Everything started to work again.
And that's often one of our suggestions when you're having internet problems. Turn off your firewall temporarily and see what happens.
Right.
And maybe you blocked something that needed to not be blocked.
Right. And the first question to ask in terms of troubleshooting is, what's the last change you made? And most people cannot remember that. All right, our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joel. What's your question?
Hello, folks. Question is, the new iPhone 5 has the option of GSM with AT&T or CDMA with Verizon, and I'm interested in what the difference is and whether one is preferred.
Well, they are technologically different and technologically incompatible with another. Which is a big annoyance if you travel, especially to other countries. GSM is the global service for mobile communication, and it's typically the...
Except that's not going to work at first in AT&T.
Well, that's LTE.
Right, the next, LTE. Yeah. Right.
So GSM is the global standard. So if you get an AT&T phone here, you'll be able to use it in just about every other country in the world. If you get a CDMA phone here, you may not be able to use it in other countries because CDMA isn't that popular outside of America. CDMA is technically a little better in technology than GSM because it came later. They took what they learned from GSM and added it to CDMA. The latest technology is LTE, and that's the 4G technology that Verizon is using. And AT&T has their own 4G, which is HSDPA Plus. So when AT&T says they have the largest 4G network, they are skirting the definition of 4G,
right.
Meaning it's faster than 3G. And then Verizon says they have the fastest 4G, or the biggest 4G LTE network. They're also right because they're using LTE, which is going to be the global standard for 4G. The problem is they're on different frequencies as well. So that has been an issue with the iPad that has the LTE on it. It doesn't work in some countries. In fact, Australia sued Apple because they didn't have LTE there. They do now because they specifically said Australia when they were showing the iPhone 5 demo. But the bigger question is what's better in your town and whether you plan to travel anywhere and see what's better in their town, ask your neighbors to see what happens. What we see a lot of in Rochester here is that Verizon has better coverage because they bought all of Frontier's towers when Frontier got out of the cell phone business. But AT&T works just fine in most places as well. It would have been nice if they had a global phone where it's one phone that has all the technologies in it, but that would have made it thicker.
Right, you don't want it thicker.
You don't want it thicker, yeah. So you have to pick whether you want AT&T, Sprint, or Verizon when you buy your phone, and you can't change it later.
Yeah, so CDMA is a slightly better technology because it's newer. But what it really comes down to is who's your carrier. Whichever one you have, they should be perfectly adequate.
And basically the CDMA and the GSM are you know generation one of cellular, and so under GSM you've got the UMTS and HSPA, which is generation 3.5, although they call it 4G because it's faster than 3G, and with the CDMA models you've got also EVDO, EVDO, which is generation 3. And LTE, which is Generation 4. So the Apple website has a list of all the specs and radios. There's a dozen different radios in the iPhone already on different frequencies, and it's still not enough to support the whole world.
Well, did I hear Nick say that LTE is not available for AT&T yet?
Not in Rochester, but I'm pretty sure it was coming soon. The last time I looked at their LTE network. So the way the phones work is that it tries the best and fastest connection it has, so it'll try LTE. If it can't find that, it will back down to the 3.5G and then back down to 3G and then back down to 2G until it finds a good signal.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have used my Verizon phone, just CDMA, continuously between here and Chicago, and except for the corridors, the steel corridors of downtown Chicago, I never lost the signal. Once in a while, it would drop to 3G. Actually, it's not true. Somewhere in the wilds of Ohio, which is a wasteland from my point of view anyway, sorry. The wilds of Ohio. I lost signal once there. But generally speaking, I had 4G most of the way. And certainly connectivity almost all the way. So, you know, if you're looking for, because we live in a fairly large urban environment, either one should be fine. It's where you're traveling to. So check their coverage maps to see where there's no coverage. So, for example, my sister-in-law was very lucky where she lives in. You want to talk about the wild? She lives in the mountains of Arizona on a horse farm. They have Verizon now.
And AT&T's coverage map says that Rochester is now included in their LTE.
Oh, very nice.
So that must have been fairly recently.
Yep. All right, our next caller is our friend Joe from Cheektowaga. Welcome, Joe. What do you know?
Howdy. I was going to suggest if this guy doesn't like how his mouse works in Excel, how about LibreOffice?
Yeah, you did mention that on the what you call it too. The LibreOffice, for those of you who don't know, is an office suite, very comparable to Microsoft Office. It has a word processor, it has a spreadsheet, it has a presentation program, it has a database, it has a drawing program, it has a math package, and it's free, absolutely 100% free. And extremely compatible with Office.
Also, upload the document to or the spreadsheet to Google Docs. If he happens to have a Google account, he can do most things up there too.
Right, right. Google Docs will do many of those things. And I don't know. I do not have a magic mouse. I've never used one with LibreOffice. Although I have used a MacBook Pro.
I think I have LibreOffice on
with LibreOffice, so I don't know if that succumbs to the same problem. But we'll check that out. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, I was wondering if you've heard of an SSL TLS vulnerability that was exposed this week. It had to do with compression and certain features of websites like Speedy. Something I read about that there's a potential vulnerability there, and what the heck are we going to do if we can't trust our SSL connections? It's like, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I did not read about that. I saw it in passing, but it has been an amazing week for me. And so there were a lot of things I did not get to. So,
How'd the Android talk go?
I had a great time. Tuesday night, I talked about Android tablets at the RCSI, the Rochester Computer Society meeting. Wednesday night, I talked about copyright, which apparently I wasn't supposed to. Talked about copyright at the CIDR meeting. Both of them gave me mugs. I was very thrilled. And I had fun. I don't really care about anybody else. I had fun. But I believe I understand that other people liked them too, so I was very happy. Thank you for asking. But, yeah, I will look into the SSL TLS vulnerability. That would be a very bad thing.
And I would also subscribe to the Security Now podcast on the This Week in Tech Network, twit.tv/SN. He it doesn't look like they've done one. The last episode came out on the 11th, so probably this week's episode they'll be talking about that. But they talk about all sorts of security issues and protocol issues and compression issues and pretty much anything.
Is this the renegotiation vulnerability, or?
I don't remember the details. I remember it's if the connection decides to use compression, and it certain web there was another protocol besides Speedy, which it attempts to eliminate the round trip delays when you're requesting multiple documents. I don't remember the exact details. It's one of those things I saw in passing, too. It's like, yeah. Oh, my goodness, what are we going to do now?
It's the crime attack.
Yes, I saw that cute initialism, too, crime.
No, that one I didn't, because I know there was one that the renegotiation thing was back in 2009, maybe?
Yeah, crime.
A couple of years ago.
Compression feature of SSL. It's so a couple of security researchers are going to present it next week at a conference in Buenos Aires. So we'll get more information about it then as well.
I remember they moved Security Now for the big Apple announcement this past week too.
Yeah. Right.
So ready.
24 hours yep. a day.
Okay. Thanks,
thank
Joe. We got to go.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Linda Wildman, and you. It is 21 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman.
I'm still waiting for the... I'm David Wright.
Dave Enright.
Yeah.
I'm Dave Enright. It's 25 minutes after the hour, and for no reason at all, we continue to be soundbites.
90.1 soundbites.
On member-supported Jazz 90.1.
We were talking about security and, yeah. and Security Now. Another place to go is Bruce Schneier's website, Schneier on Security. Doesn't look like he has anything listed on that one right now. Although, interesting blog entry here. The CBS has got a new Sherlock Holmes series.
Yeah.
Is that the one with Lucy Liu?
Lucy Liu.
Because there's two Sherlock Holmes series coming out.
Yeah, one of them is called Elementary, and it's got Lucy Liu in it.
And Schneier's books are on her bookshelf.
Nice. Well, they wouldn't be on her bookshelf.
Or Holmes's bookshelf. Yeah, she plays Watson.
Yeah. They haven't yet made a female Sherlock Holmes, which would probably send people with pitchforks for no discernible reason after them. But I'm still waiting for a female doctor. I want it to be River Song. All right, our next caller is Don from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Yeah, well, you were talking about 4G and 3G. If you don't download movies or much music of that, is there any advantage to 4G over 3G?
No, it's all about the speed.
It's only about the speed.
General web surfing will be faster as well. It will load pages faster. It loads pictures on web pages faster. Video clips on web pages faster, so everything can be faster.
Right, that's what it's about. There's no technical advantage in terms of you get a better signal or a stronger signal. That depends entirely on the coverage created by the phone company in your area. You can get a very weak 4G and a very strong 3G, or vice versa. That has to do with antenna placements and everything else. The big advantage of 4G over 3G, the big advantage is speed.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, since I don't need that much speed, I don't think I need to upgrade because the new phones don't have replaceable batteries.
Yeah, a lot of new phones, even in the Android market, they don't have user-replaceable batteries. They are replaceable. They're not user-replaceable.
Well, I like the fact that I can have spare battery and recharge it if I'm traveling or something.
There are third-party companies that have come out with external rechargeable batteries.
Yeah, I had one of those for my old phone, but it's not as nice.
And then your phone is thicker.
I was just about to say, I just bought the thinnest. Actually, the iPhone is not the thinnest phone in the world. There's at least five that are thinner. But I just bought the thinnest phone, and then I added an inch and a half of battery to it. Great.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's the heck of it.
But if you actually want to use your phone to make phone calls, then none of that matters.
Yeah, right. I sometimes play computer games, or sometimes I listen to. I have very weak signal for some AM stations that I then listen to on HD, or if I'm out working on the lawn or something, I can listen to the radio on my phone.
Right, and that's part of the promise of all of this stuff is that. You can take your music anywhere you want to go. You can take your radio anywhere you want to go. I know people who listen to television stations when they're out and about with particular types of equipment. And all of that takes battery.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing you're going to be able to do about that.
Yeah, well, that's why it's nice having a spare. I don't have to tie up my phone to recharge my battery. And I can carry a little thin battery that takes up no space.
Right.
Well, thanks for answering the question.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I have. I have a friend who bought, what was the model? Doesn't matter. But bought an extra battery for it, and now gets like 2 days out of his battery.
Yeah.
I get about 15 hours out of mine, which is really more than I need. Although there are days when I'm out for 15 or 18 hours, so yeah, I suppose maybe I do need it. But if I'm in the car, for example, using it as a GPS and stuff, I plug it in, so it doesn't. You know, I don't care. But I have another friend who travels extensively for her job, and she's got three or four batteries that she has chargers for. And so she recharges the batteries as she goes. And then if she finds herself on an international, well, you can't use it on the flight anyway, but if she finds herself overseas, whatever, she's running from meeting to meeting, whatever, 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 and she's in New York City, so she doesn't have a car, she can swap batteries in a couple of seconds and be back on the air.
Yep. Yeah, that's one of the big things that the European Union has tried to address, is that almost every cell phone uses a different charging connector.
Right.
So in the EU, they've mandated that all cell phones have to have a micro USB connector.
Well, and Apple just changed the connector.
Yeah, they made the 30-pin docking connector. They made into a smaller, it's 8 or 9-pin connector. It's 80% smaller, so they can make the phone smaller. And one of the really nice things about it is it's bidirectional. So it doesn't matter which way you put it in. You can put it in either way, because it's really annoying when you're trying to plug that docking connector in and you got it the wrong way and it doesn't fit.
Like, okay, seriously, are we so worried that Apple people are so stupid that if it doesn't go in one way, they give up?
No, but it takes longer. It's like the USB connector. When it doesn't work the first way, you try it the second way, and then when it doesn't work the second way, you try it the third way, and it works.
Exactly, every time. Exactly. Yep.
So what Apple had to do in Europe with the 30-pin connectors, they have a 30-pin to micro USB for charging,
right.
But the 30-pin connector gives it much more capabilities, and then the new light, they're calling it Lightning connector to go along with Thunderbolt on the computers.
Sure.
The new Lightning connector gives it more than just charging capability, all the docking accessories that were available, but they are also making a micro USB adapter for Europe to follow the EU guidelines for charging.
Right. Well, I have a news item here that, since we're talking about phones, anyone who's ever suspected that carriers overcharge for monthly wireless data can now feel some vindication. A new study from UCLA suggests they're probably right. MIT's Technology Review says that the study looked at mobile data calculations from two major wireless carriers, and found that while carriers usually got things right, they tended to overcount when they did err in their estimates. And this doesn't just affect people who spend their entire day streaming video either, as the researchers found that even typical use of a phone could lead the data to be overcounted by 5 to 7%. The major reason for all the overcounting is that carriers calculate data based on when it leaves their network, not when it actually arrives at the user's smartphone. So a user trying to stream video in an area with poor coverage or just make a call, since calls are data now, might experience major packet loss during the video, but will still get charged for those lost data since the carrier records it as having been transmitted. Technology Review notes that this issue particularly affects video and audio streaming apps in particular, because these protocols that don't require the receiving device to acknowledge the receipt of every chunk of data as web browsers and many other apps do. So do you worry about your cell carrier overcharging you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or of course, toll free 1-800-790-0415, and if you're lucky, the call will not be dropped. I tell you what, I use Google's two-factor authentication. So whenever I log into a new computer, this happens
like at Cider.
When you log into a new computer to get your Gmail or whatever, it actually sends a verification code to your phone. So it's two things. I put in my username and password, which I know, and then it verifies something that I have, my cell phone, to prove it's me and that somebody didn't just steal my password. They would have to also steal my phone. So earlier in the afternoon, I had tried to log in to a machine that I was going to take with me, and I never got the text. This was at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I used the other method, which was they call me, and this automated voice reads me off a number, and I type it in, and I'm in. I got that text, 5 hours later?
Wow. Yeah, we assume these...
6 hours later.
We assume emails and texts get sent instantly.
No.
Well, they might get sent instantly, but not delivered.
Yeah, well, all right. I got it like 6 hours later. I was sitting in the CIDR meeting giving my talk, and my phone went off, and I looked, because my wife had been sick, and so I looked. And it was this message that... that was giving me my code from some 100 hours before. It was ridiculous. I just thought it was sad. But, you know, if you look at the contract you sign with your carrier, they don't promise to do anything. Particularly, they don't promise to actually send you your text.
It says reasonable attempt or something like that.
Yeah, something along that line. Reasonable for whom?
Yeah, for them.
Yeah, for them, not for me. So, yeah, it was hours and hours later. I am working with an outside company that does text reminders of all sorts, and we can't guarantee that a text will get to you. We know we sent it, but we can't guarantee you will receive it in a timely manner because we don't control your cell carrier. You know, and in general, text messaging is women and children first. You know, it's the very last thing to get off the Titanic. So it just gets, sometimes they just get lost in the ether. So you can't always count on any of that stuff. You know, people talked about dropped calls and they talk about data overages and blah, blah, blah. But text messaging is very much the same.
Doesn't it run on like a sub-carrier frequency that's just sort of part of the phone system until someone decided they could charge money to use it?
Yeah, actually sending text messages is essentially a free service. That side carrier, the SMS side carrier is there to begin with, and it was originally used, I think, for sending phone "Are you there's?" "Yes, I'm here's" kind of things, that so that they could communicate with the phone itself without interrupting any conversation you might be having.
Yeah,
it was a short message service, an ACK-NACK sort of thing. And suddenly they realized, well, we can send messages over, and we seemed to set them at 160 characters, but that's not entirely accurate. They could be of any length.
It was initially 128 bytes.
Right.
Or then later improved to 140 bytes, which is 140 characters because it's one character per byte.
No, it's 160 for, so it's 140 for Twitter. It's
167-bit bytes.
Right.
If it's an 8-bit byte, it's less.
Right. But yeah.
And your eyes are glazing.
Yeah.
So when you want to put a smile,
right, we got people in all across the country going, "Ooh, 7 bits! Wow!"
If you want to put
that's good info.
If you want to put a emoji con in it to have a real smiley face, that's eight bits.
That's right. That's exactly right.
What is it? At 25 cents per text message, which is what most services charge without a plan,
right?
Multiplied by how many 128 bytes per meg? It's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars a meg.
Right. Right. And it isn't, I think, you know, the reality is it's just all data now. You know, it's just all data. There's no such thing as voice and data. When you use a 4G network, your voice is transmitted as data. When you send SMS, when you send text messages, that's sent as data. When you download an app, that's data. When you get music, that's data. It's all data, 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 data. And yet they charge us separately for the number of minutes you use voice or the number of text messages you send, and then they put a cap on your data. Well, it's all data. Why do they even bother? I suppose I should get off my horse.
And then they charge you extra if you're outside your home network. In the olden days, that was city by city. I had a friend who lived in Farmington, and she came to Eastview Mall in Ontario County and bought a phone that was in the Rochester zone, got her first phone bill from living in Farmington, and it was hundreds of dollars because every call she made was roaming to Rochester. Mm-hmm. At least nowadays it's nationwide roaming, or nationwide local call, no roaming. But since we live so close to Canada, we hear stories all the time about people that accidentally get a Canadian tower bounce, or you just run up to Toronto for the weekend and get a $1,000 phone bill because you don't realize Toronto's a different country.
Yep. Theosis over on the IRC chat is saying that iMessage is a godsend. Yep. And yeah, but it's still data.
It's still data, yeah. But it doesn't use your cell carrier.
Then again, it could be data.
Could be data.
One is singular, one is plural, right?
No, datum.
When you say data,
I'm thinking of the Android on the next.
Right, right. So it's data. Yeah. You prefer data? I will try to remember that.
Is ood a singular or plural?
Both.
Both.
Well, we all know that. The ood and the ood.
Yep.
So an ad and the an ood and the ood.
Yep.
So yeah, but it's I don't know. It strikes me as specious.
It's evolving.
Best.
When telephones, landline telephones first came out, you paid for incoming calls and outgoing calls, and eventually that became flat rate for everything in your local zone.
Right.
When cell phones first came out, it was the same sort of thing. You paid for all calls both directions, and then as the carriers kind of gobbled everybody else up, now you make free calls on your own network. Eventually, maybe in another 10 years or so, we'll see unlimited, who cares what type of data.
When Google brings in fiber, what's to prevent them from putting up towers?
Yep.
Honestly, what's to prevent them? All right, we're going to take a break and make it WiMAX or something. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 41 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported jazz, 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
In fact, he's absolutely correct. Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, Don from Hilton is back on the phone. Welcome, Don. What's up this time?
Well, I just thought you were talking about roaming charges in Canada. I have a smartphone, and I found out I have to make it so that set it up so it will not do any data transfers when it's roaming, because I went to Canada, did not use my phone, and it cost me $4.50. Because my phone decided to do some sort of an update while I was there.
Oh, yeah.
Check for updates.
I just thought the smart thing to do is actually turn your phone off when you go to Canada. But it cost me $4 for doing nothing.
A lot of smartphones, in fact, I should probably say most, if not all smartphones, have an option to turn off data roaming, to turn off voice roaming. Turn off roaming completely so you don't run up those kind of bills.
Yeah, I just thought I would make a comment because here, the first time I was just over Niagara-on-the-Lake, and I got one nice thing is Verizon did text message me and warn me about it.
Yep.
Yeah, the carriers have started to do that now. That there have been a lot of complaints about people accidentally running up charges like that, so they're starting to text you.
But I just thought I would make a comment so that people were aware of it. I know you were talking about, using the cell phone, but here I didn't even use it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. We actually, my wife and I honeymooned at Niagara-on-the-Lake, and then we went back for our umpty-umpth anniversary and left my daughter with my sister-in-law. And so we left our phones on, so if she needed to call, she could. And we were a little shocked at and this is back in the day when phones just did phones, right? But, I mean, it's all we did was make calls. We had roaming charges on the calls, but it was a significant amount of money for the day.
So if you do plan on traveling out of the country, you can get a international data plan or a global data plan. Carriers call it different things, so that it's not... doesn't cost as much as roaming data. It's still a heck of a lot more than your local data plans. In fact, I'm looking at Verizon's site now. Typically, a Verizon data plan is $30 for 10 gigs of data in the month. The global data plan is $25 for 100 megs of data. 100 megs is almost nothing these days. So check with your carrier. If you want to be able to use data and voice calls when you're out of the country, you can get these global data packages and global voice packages that cost less than roaming. We've also heard some nice things about most of the customer service, that if you didn't realize you were roaming like that, when you get back into the country, you can call them, and oftentimes they'll either knock the bill down or retroactively let you purchase one of these global plans so that it wouldn't have cost you the zillions of dollars. I heard a story online about video producers. And they were uploading one of their video podcasts and forgot to switch from cellular to Wi-Fi, and they got a $7,000 cell phone bill for uploading a 1 gigabyte video file.
Yep.
Ouch.
All right. Does that help? Is Don gone?
Yeah.
Don is gone. All right. Our next caller is Paul. Where are you calling from, Paul?
I'm calling from in transit from Rochester. I had some comments about your cell phone usage along the Canadian border.
Yep. Yep.
I have home in Canada and the Thousand Islands, and for years we had AT&T, and we could never get even, we had to go several miles into the States to get away from Bell or Hughes.
Right.
A couple of years ago, we transferred to Verizon, and I discovered that if I turn roaming off, which is not obvious in the setup plan, but I found it, I can call from a mile or so into Canada, back to the States, on Verizon. It's very nice.
That is very nice.
More
Thank
and more
you.
Towers have been added, yep.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, we go to Toronto quite often for conventions, and years ago I was on a Sprint phone, and we got to Toronto and it wouldn't work, roaming or not. The way the cell systems work, in Toronto, Rogers is one of the biggest Canadian cell companies. So Rogers carries your call. They send a bill to Sprint, and Sprint sends the bill to me. Well, I paid my bill. Sprint never paid Rogers. And apparently this was a huge problem for years. And so Rogers just said, okay, we're not going to carry Sprint calls anymore.
Wow.
Well, my advice to anybody that's in this situation is turn off your data roaming. Turn off your voice roaming, and then if you see any kind of signal, you're with your local provider, and you're not going to pay roaming charges. My wife has an iPad with Verizon and roaming, and most of the time we can use that on our cottage too.
Right.
Nice.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Nice talking to you.
Good talking to you. Thanks, Paul. Drive safely.
And driving while you're roaming too. That's
yeah, right. Well, back in the day, I was doing dinner theater in Detroit, and we would often cut across Canada to come back to Rochester. Yep. But that was in the days when, you know, phone calls were in a phone booth for a dime. So, or I suppose a nickel, and Mabel would answer the phone. Mabel, connect me with Joe over at the garage.
I saw a cute cartoon the other day that, what does Superman do now that phone booths are gone?
Exactly. Well, that was in the very first Superman
movie. In the
movie,
you walked to one of those half phone booths at the time.
Yep. All right, our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Maybe you can help me with a problem I have with sluggish performance of a laptop. In particular, I'll give you a little background here. I'm working with XP Home, and I have a CPU that runs at 1.6 gigahertz, and I've got 1.5 gig of RAM, and trying to call or dial into Yahoo to get some financial data. And typically it responds pretty well, but in one particular case recently, it was running very, very, very slowly. And I have learned to do a little checking on the task manager, Windows Task Manager, after talking with you fellows a few weeks ago. And I found that whereas it normally was running with the RAM usage of around 980 or 800 and some megabytes, it was way up to 1.8 gig. In other words, it showed it to be essentially full.
Yep.
And yet I've run that program many times tied into that source.
Well, was there anything else? And this is a Windows machine with what? XP Home, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah. Was something else running?
Nothing else running that was listed under the task manager. I have been looking under applications.
Sometimes you have to go into processes and then all processes. Because even when you're not running anything, there are dozens and dozens of processes running in the computer.
Now, to that extent, that processes list is quite long. Although, it, as I understand, under CPU column, it shows, for example, a pair of zeros. for most of the processing.
Sort by the CPU usage, and you can see what's taking up most of it. See, right now on my computer, I have 659 threads running. So I have 659 separate programs running. And Flash is taking up 97.5% of my, 109% of my CPU. Because I'm the streaming video we're using is Flash.
Now, how do I sort by CPU?
Click that column.
Left click?
Yep. You may have to click it twice to do an ASORT or a descending sort.
Okay.
And then it eventually should put the highest CPU usage at the top of the column.
So, for example, at the moment, and I'm not trying to run the program that I had the trouble with, but it shows the system idle process 98.
Yeah, usually that's the one that's running the most is idle. It's ironic that idle is using most of your CPU to be idle.
Because I'm not using it for any other purpose, I would presume.
Right.
Okay. So if I was trying to connect in through the Internet to get to Yahoo, then I would find that certain of those would be occupied.
Right. It would show you what the other processes are and how much of the CPU they're using as well.
Now, presumably, though, if I have only been running this particular program for several minutes and I had nothing else open, at least not intentionally, then although I understand theoretically something else could be open, but in general, I wouldn't expect anything to be open for very long.
It may have been Windows Update, noticing you're on the Internet and checking for updates. It might have been the Time Server, Adobe software update, if you've got like Flash or Adobe Reader installed. A lot of programs now, in fact, probably most programs, assume that you're continually on the Internet, and they check in the background for updates all the time. And so if you happen to connect to the Internet, the programs might go, oh, you're on the Internet, I better check.
So, Steve, then what you're telling me is I could go here and I will be able to check and see if something was running.
Yeah, you'll see what processes are running. You can sort by CPU. I think you can sort by memory, too. I can on my Mac, to see what program what process is taking up the most amount of memory. And then you can see what that is, because most of the time it's going to be a cryptic, you know, something.exe under Windows. You may have to Google that exe name to see what the actual program is, to figure out what it's doing and if that's normal or not.
Okay, I do see now a column that says memory usage.
Yeah.
Okay, you give me some good leads.
Sure.
Yep. Thank you very much.
All right, excellent. Thanks.
I was checking a computer yesterday he was afraid it was the customer that accidentally got into that fake tech support thing. So I'm checking the processes to see, you know, if any of the remote access processes are there. And I kept seeing this process called intercheck popping up. And that struck me as odd. So I Google around. That's the Sophos antivirus process. Okay. Why don't you call it Sophos antivirus instead of intercheck?
Yeah, exactly. All right. That music tells me that we are done for another week. I want to thank Linda Wildman in particular, who did yeoman service here, sitting in for Dave Enright, who's probably, we hope, still one step ahead of the law somewhere. She'll be here for the next few hours because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. So stay tuned for that. For Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank you for listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.